on America Can We Talk, I talk about election integrity, border security, healthcare freedom, race relations, energy and tax policy, education policy, free speech and assembly, freedom of religion, and all other issues that touch on the God-given right of every American to life, liberty, and the pursuit of their version of happiness. Stay tuned. You preach your tolerance, but lecture me. Is there no end to your own hypocrisy? Your God is power, you have no shame. Your only interest is political gain. You hide your eyes and refuse to listen. You play your game.
Coming up next, America Can We Talk with your host, Debbie Georgiatos.
And hello and welcome to America Can We Talk. I'm Debbie Georgiatos. We're doing something special on this Thursday. Normally we have a Thursday in-studio audience and we have a very lively show, but I wanted to do a special report. We can call this a special edition of America Can We Talk. We have one of our favorite longtime guests on the show has joined us numerous times, Dr. Richard Bartlett. He joined us actually a few weeks ago on our Thursday show, but there's so much going on in the world of COVID is too minor a way to describe it. Kind of politically what's happening with impending flus and also lessons we should have learned from COVID. We just have so many more things, I think. And when Dr. Bartlett was available to come in and do a special edition show, I jumped on the chance. And so we're going to try to cover today. I'll introduce him in just a moment. What we're going to try to cover today is kind of, you know, recognizing the patterns that our country and the medical community engaged in as we dealt with COVID in 2020, 21, 22. And, you know, what does the future hold? And a lot of steps in between, things that people should understand about policy in America, medical policy, healthcare freedom, all relating and arising out of the COVID and next allegedly impending pandemics. Richard Bartlett, very quickly to introduce him. The reason we know him so well on our show, he joined me on this show live in July of 2020. And it was at that time, if you can get your head back to when that was, in July of 2020, the fear of COVID was rampant. There were people who became very ill with COVID, and we had just a fear mindset that had filled the country. And all of us at that time were waiting for the promised all-powerful vaccines, which were rushed to production that year. But at that time, in July of 2020, the vaccines were not around, and the main advice coming out of Dr. Fauci and the the NIH was basically, look, you know, what you ought to do is try to stay home, don't go anywhere, wear your mask, don't be out in crowds. And if you do get sick, basically, don't go to the emergency room until you practically can't breathe anymore. And then when you get there and you're admitted to the hospital, what they had to offer was very little in the way of actual healing treatments for people. They had just as much more danger and impending death and putting people on ventilators, which proved to be extremely catastrophic. So what happened in July of 2020 is I happened to have met Dr. Bartlett at a political function, and he was talking about he had discovered something in his work in an emergency room here in Texas, in Midland, Odessa, Texas, basically realizing what might work as everyone was thinking the only answer was going to be vaccine. So my other background, I'm probably taking longer than he'd like me to do introduce him, but I do want to tell you some things about Dr. Bartlett. Here we sit now, we're in 2024, but back in 2020, very few doctors challenged the NIH, very few doctors dared to even tiptoe outside the advice coming out of the CDC and the NIH. So basically everyone followed that pretty much don't do anything until you're almost dead protocol. But some doctors were brave. Dr. Bartlett was one. He talked about inhaled budesonide on the show, as well as talking about comparing what budesonide was doing for some patients, how it could help here. So Dr. Bartlett, along with other doctors we've interviewed on this show, including, of course, Dr. Simone Gold, the founder of America's Frontline Doctors, was just on the show couple months ago again recently, she has been very active in trying to not just provide people with information, but with alternatives about what to do when you're facing a very, very serious health problem. So, but back to Dr. Brawley, joined me in July of 2020. I learned at that time, you know, he was an exemplary doctor even then, before he became what I think of as the higher class of physicians, the thinkers among physicians, not just the follow orders and prescribe things and wait to see what happens, but a thinker among physicians and really a thought leader within the medical community. So where he is from, which is, I mentioned, Midland, Odessa, he had, in his past, he had been appointed by Governor Rick Perry, the former governor of Texas, to the then newly formed Texas Health Disparities Task Force. He worked on that task force. He actually also happens to have traveled the world on missions trying to help people in countries who don't have access to quality care. He was previously elected numerous times by his own peers, meaning other doctors in West Texas, elected him to serve as the Ector County Medical Society president for 4 consecutive terms. And I'm laying this out for you because as we dive in, a lot of what you'll hear today about where we are and where we're headed, I want to be sure to really lay the groundwork for you to understand this is a hands-on thinking doctor who did one more thing to tell you before I bring him on was. So when COVID came along and we did this show in July of 2020, it went viral. I mean, viral to the point, I know it went to the White House, it went to people in Congress, it went viral in the millions of views because he was offering hope and a sense of calm at a time of extreme panic in this country. So it was a really, really important show. And at that time he was saying things really I didn't hear almost anyone else saying at all. And so since that time, he's continued to be a leader in the medical community, trying to help people understand what can help when COVID comes along. That episode, having gone viral, also led to other things we've talked about in the show before, including a lot of shadow banning of my show, this show, America Can We Talk, a little undesirable attention from some medical authorities. I won't go there today. I'm just saying, when you speak up and speak truth, you do get pushback. And so I commend him also as a brave doctor, willing to continue speaking the truth. And after all that, welcome to the show, Dr. Richard Bartlett. Hi there.
Debbie, good to be back. Thank you.
Well, thank you for being here. And, you know, I know we have many, many things facing us. We talked about bird flu last time you were on. But, you know, this kind of big picture story of what we learned from COVID, what happened to America during COVID, and what happened to the medical community and your freedom to practice, just everything that we saw a lot of things change in the medical world in America. So I just want to start with a very broad question, which is essentially, so, you know, we are past COVID hysteria, mostly, you know, people are pretty calm about it now. So what lessons do you see? What patterns did you see? And what lessons should we have learned?
Debbie, I was caught by surprise when COVID came. I wasn't looking for it. Everybody was busy taking care of their families. Everybody was busy working. That life is complicated for everyone. Mm-hmm. And so as a doctor, this came out of the blue to me as well. I was caught by surprise. And so I don't want that to happen again. We don't have to, because there's things that we can know. But actually, over time, it's become very clear that it was a setup. And that setup is still in place. And so today, we're going to expose that and also tell people, like you said in your introduction, we don't have to be afraid. We're not helpless or hopeless. There's always something we can do. There's actually 9 pandemics that the WHO says basically you can count on. And they list those at their website. And so we will talk about that. And there are inexpensive, readily available, safe medicines that have been out with a long-term safety record for all of those. And at the same time, there's new, novel, experimental, human experimentation vaccines that have already been created for all 9 of them. And so how do you put so much time and money into that if you don't expect it to happen? So we're gonna let people know. I said on January 1, 2020, the American healthcare system was hijacked. I'm gonna say, actually, it was ambushed. The American people were ambushed. And we are not gonna be caught by surprise again and again and again. We can see what's coming. We can see the writing on the wall. And so I'm gonna show some some pictures to help trigger the story of what the setup was that we went through.
Okay, can I jump in and say one thing? You just said on WHO, on WHO's website right now, 9 impending pandemics in the future predicted. And I hate to sound ignorant, but I guess I will. How do they know that unless they are orchestrating them? Unless someone's orchestrating them?
Thank you, that's a good question. That's almost a rhetorical question, and we're going to talk about that. You're exactly right. Well, let me explain that. So we can go to the first. This was the cover of Time magazine in 1999, and in the corner it says how genetic engineering will change us in the next century. That's a 100-year plan. That's a long game plan. We've lived through that. That's a double helix DNA with a snake head on it. It says the future of medicine. But how genetic engineering will change us, that's DNA and RNA. Oh, have we heard about DNA and RNA for the last 4 years in a new way? Well, gain-of-function research is literally genetic engineering of viruses and bacteria to make bioweapons in labs. That's really what it is. And so they want to go ahead and make things more deadly, more dangerous, more contagious. That's genetic engineering is what Brand Paul has been talking about. And he and I have worked together on several things during the last 4 years. With COVID.
Okay, you said, I'm going to have to go back and listen to this show already. Genetic gain of function is genetic engineering of
RNA and DNA.
Of RNA and DNA.
So it's making bioweapons in labs, and we're going to, let me explain a little bit more. You're about to.
Making bioweapons,
I'm
go ahead.
Answer your questions before you ask them. And so, okay. You know, look at this. This was in 1986. This is what we experienced. This law passed under Reagan by Congress. Says you cannot hold a vaccine manufacturer accountable because it's a countermeasure and they need to have liability immunity. You can't sue them if it kills your baby. And Congress and the president and the doctors and the scientists agree 100% it killed your baby. You can't sue them because of this law. If it caused you to go blind, there are people who went blind with COVID shots. You can't sue the vaccine manufacturer. And if you were paralyzed, you can't. So that's what that was. So this is part of the setup that we've experienced for the last 4 years. Several laws that have been laid down. That's one of them.
Can I jump in and ask? I know you're saying you can't sue the manufacturer regardless of death or injury, but there is a fund. Is this the same law that set up the fund that says you can't apply due to harm and isn't coming from the manufacturers of the vaccine? It's basically coming from public taxes.
Yes.
Correct?
Okay. Yeah, and so that, for people who have myocarditis, that's paying out years later. After they're so backlogged on the, you know how efficient the government is in general, all the jokes about that. They have tens of thousands of people that are backlogged waiting in line. They've paid a little over $1,000 to one fellow who had myocarditis, which probably shortened his life. And he got $1,000. How's that going to pay his mortgage? How's that going to get him through the month?
Yeah,
plus all the time that he spent in the hospital, all the hospital bills, $1,000 to cover all that. So that's an example of how ridiculous this is. But you can't hold the vaccine manufacturers accountable, and that's a problem. So here's another thing that was part of the setup. The UN in 1975, we joined under President Ford the Biological Weapons Convention Treaty. And that says germ warfare bad, bioweapons bad, those are weapons of mass destruction, those are bad, everybody would agree. But there's a loophole, according to Dr. Harvey Risch from Yale, that you can make a small batch of bioweapons if you make a vaccine at the same time as a countermeasure. And so that was probably when countermeasures started coming out. And so in real time, didn't it seem weird that they were able to come out with a vaccine solution almost in real time with the problem? And when monkeypox came out, well, there's a vaccine. Biden just bought hundreds of millions of doses of and dollars worth of monkeypox vaccine. How did he do that so fast? Because if you make a bioweapon by gain of function research, you can do that. And if you're making a vaccine at the same time as a countermeasure. Countermeasure is a big, important term. You're going to hear that over and over again. Because after that, the next law in 2005 was under George W. Bush, and it was the PREP Act, which says, well, that's good to have liability protection where you can't sue the vaccine manufacturer if they killed your baby. You can't sue the vaccine manufacturer if you're paralyzed or lost your vision. But let's go to the PREP Act in 2005 and give blanket immunity to any organization that's involved in a countermeasure. Well, that's beyond that. That's hospitals, that's doctors, that would be people that are on the White House Coronavirus Task Force that have lied to us on purpose, why they're not being held accountable, possibly. It might be even other bizarre things that have been a part of medical tyranny in the United States, here in Texas even. And so we'll show some examples of that. But if you go to the next one, you'll see literally the wording in the PREP Act says that there's liability, immunity, unless there's willful misconduct. That is a huge, that's a high bar for a lawyer to take on the government, saying we got evidence of willful misconduct, and so I'll take your case because your loved one died or your baby died or you're paralyzed. And so it's a big barrier to
Can I jump in on the PREP Act really quickly? One thing that you, I mean, this is, I probably could just not talk for the whole next hour, but I kind of want to jump in. One was, and I became aware of this case, I think, through you, but the PREP Act's protection is of everyone involved in the administration of vaccines and the administering of vaccines is so complete and so complex that overarching that this case that you sent to me, I found just shocking.
As a lawyer, how did it strike you?
Well, the quick story for our listeners was a stepfather took his teenage son to the North Carolina high school to basically run in to get a COVID test. That's the dad's waiting outside. The kid runs in, 14 years old, get a COVID test. He probably had to have it for some sport or whatever. He went in, and while he was there, the people administering the test said, oh, he should get a COVID vaccine. And the kid said, my mother doesn't want me to have that. They made one effort to call the mom, couldn't get a hold of her, administer the vaccine to this young man.
12-year-old.
Anyway, 12-year-old. Okay.
14-year-old.
Yeah. Anyway, all I can say about it was, you know, the idea that parents have primary control of their children. And so eventually the mom, the family sued and said, you don't get to administer a vaccine to my minor child without my permission. She was trying to hold accountable the people, the individual who administered it, the supervisor, the organization that was supposed to only be doing COVID tests that day. And the entire case up the ladder of in courts all said, no, PREP Act completely renders these people, they're immune from any liability at all. Parents had nowhere to go to complain about this child's vaccine. That is just, that is preposterous, and it is unheard of until recently in American history how extreme the PREP Act was in just saying to basically, we're going to vaccinate people and no one's going to say a darn word. Okay.
Against their will.
Against their will, yeah, against their will, and the child said no. Child conveying what his mom had said, she doesn't want me to have that. Didn't matter.
Yeah, you can't say no anymore, according to the PREP Act. That's what that precedent set.
Yep. Okay.
And so you're right. Your child's body, the government's choice, is what the PREP Act says, and that case proved it. And so there's some memes that I saw on the internet. Everybody sees these memes. But one of the things you lost was the HIPAA laws give you privacy of your medical records. And so, but boy, everybody had a right to know whether you got a COVID shot, even though it was experimental. They got to ask you, did you get your shots? But when there start to be problems, like someone might have a heart attack, myocarditis, or other problems, you can't ask them if they got their shot.
Yeah.
I just thought that was just kind of ironic. That's a meme. Moving on.
Well, it's how much our culture has been controlled by all what they're doing, that people just follow along. Oh, we know we don't ask that. We do ask, did you have a shot, but you never ask.
Again, these are memes, and so I'm not an artist, and I didn't come up with them. They're on the internet in the public domain. But this is, me and Peter McCullough are two of the doctors that are on the executive board for a nonprofit called Public Health and Medical Professionals for Transparency. And this nonprofit was formed because doctors have an ethical, moral, and legal responsibility to give informed consent. Informed consent means that a doctor does three things. He tells every treatment option, the risk and benefit of every treatment option, and if there's a financial conflict of interest that the doctor has with that treatment that he's offering. And so when we sued the FDA for the Pfizer data, so we could give informed consent, because doctors didn't have the risk and the benefits. We weren't told anything. We were told that it's safe and effective, period. And so we needed to be able to tell the truth. And so we sued them. The FDA pushed back and said, we do have that in the computer, what you're asking for. Legally, we're supposed to give it to you. We don't want the American people to see this for 55 years. And so we're not giving it to you. And then 2 weeks later, they changed their mind. They said, we changed our mind. We don't want the American people to see this for 75 years. And then I was in the federal court in Fort Worth with federal judge Mark Pittman, and me and the attorney Aaron Serier on one side, just like in a movie, and they had 12 people on the other side. Three Pfizer lawyers showed up that were not even a part of the lawsuit. Three Department of Justice lawyers showed up from D.C. to Fort Worth, and three FDA representatives. And the judge, in my paraphrase, said, you're crazy. You got to release this information to the American people. And the FDA, through the Department of Justice lawyer, said, in so many words, well, we don't have enough staff to release this information for 75 years. And my paraphrase again is from the judges, you're crazy. You're going to release that whether you like it or not. And so we got a list of 1,200 diagnoses that could either kill you immediately or can permanently disable you from the shots. This is the vaccine manufacturer made this list. Pfizer made this list, and then they gave it to the FDA. Pfizer didn't release that information to the public. All you hear is safe and effective. The FDA didn't want to release it for 75 years. They were only forced by a court order from a federal judge to release it, and it's not in the news every day. It should be every day, but look at the control over the media and the censorship.
It's truly astonishing. And on the, you know, this show, in great part, is dedicated to try to preserving America and just preserving fundamental American principles, one of which is we Americans expect the government, the FDA, to be transparent with us. It's our tax dollars they're using, and they're supposed to be, especially in the context of something being forced on people, where you might lose your right to travel, right to work, all the things you can lose if you don't comply. And yet the FDA, they didn't seem uncomfortable at all, saying, nope, actually, it can take us about 75 years, apparently. That's what it'll take Pfizer to release it. And thank goodness for that judge, just saying, no way. But that, I mean, that I thought, I don't know if you were on the show or other doctors were on the show talking about that. That should have been the alarm bell of the century to everyone looking at this, saying, wait a minute, why in the world wouldn't Pfizer release it? And why would they, the FDA even think of saying 75 years? So thank you for doing that. Before we lose track of this, the organization you and Peter, Dr. McCullough, on public health medical professionals, what was it again?
It's PM, is Public Health and Medical Professionals for Transparency. And so there's a website, pmpt.org.
I'm going to look it up later. Excuse me. Okay, let's go ahead.
Look at this stuff. And also, ICanDecide.org also has the documents that were released by the FDA by court order. They didn't want to, by the way. We only got 1/40th of the information every month. They slow walked it out.
Yeah, didn't he give them up to like, is like 7 or 8 months? Was
they said, we can't release this for 75 years. Well, amazingly, in less than 2 years, we got it all. So I guess they lied. So that's the FDA for you. So if someone quotes the FDA to me, I think, oh, you're talking about that organization that wanted to hide the information from the American people for 75 years? You're quoting that FDA to me?
Right. They're to be trusted. Oh, wait. I know he probably asked you to move, but go back to that. I just love this meme.
I just want to say there was a cameo possibly by Homer Simpson on America Can We Talk Today. Just think about that.
I mean, it is. It's Bart Simpson just saying, nothing says trust the science quite like you can't sue us if something goes wrong, and we need 55 years to release the data to the public. I mean, that just says it all. The memes are better than...
I saw this on the internet, and I've got to say, wow.
It's fabulous. Okay. Yeah. I know you have a lot. Google ahead.
And so, you know, it wasn't just 55 years. You go to the next one. Hello. 75 years. It was Pfizer data that was being withheld. And so, moving on, what kind of medical tyranny was happening? We all see this on the internet and we say, that's awful. That's a terrible mother. You just make immediate judgments that this is awful. You don't put a plastic bag over your head. Everybody thinks that's wrong. And I can see you're about to say something.
Well, it's a picture. If you're listening and you can't see the video, it's a picture of a mom or someone in a grocery store with a child in a shopping cart and a plastic bag over the child's head.
Yeah, and so that's basic. I mean, you don't have to be a doctor to know that's a bad idea.
Oh my gosh.
And actually, they print that on bags many times. But,
yes.
You know, running with scissors, we're told as little children, don't run with scissors, don't stick that metal fork in the outlet, and don't put plastic bags over your head. Those are kind of things that are understood by the time you're an adult in the United States. You don't even have to be a doctor or a hospital administrator. But some of the things, if you'll go to the next, this was actually part of that countermeasure, a hospital protocol for COVID. If someone tested positive for COVID in the ER at Medical Center Hospital in Odessa, they would put a plastic bag over your head. That was a hospital protocol that they defended vehemently when I found out about it and said, push. And I said, hey, this doesn't look like a good idea. They doubled down on it, and a letter from the hospital administrator to the media defended it and explained that this was a good idea. You just don't understand.
Yeah.
It's a good idea. On her forehead, this is a teenager, a minor. It says on the plastic equipment cover, it's not made for human use. Isn't really complicated.
Yep.
What's happening, but medical tyranny really happened. People died, people were injured, people were disabled as a result of the medical treatment they received. And so if you go to the next one, it wasn't just one person, it was thousands that received bags over their head at this hospital. And still no one's been held accountable. How does that happen? You're an attorney. Tell me, how does no one get held accountable for this?
Well, there is no accountability in all of this COVID stuff. We have suspended rational.
I think we talked about the PREP Act in 2005, blanket immunity for countermeasure. So anything that can be called a countermeasure, brace yourself because you might have no rights. If you'll go to the next, this is a CDC placard that will be and posters that's put all over emergency rooms and hospitals. You can see in the bottom corner it says CDC. It's basically saying if you use disposable gloves, masks, gowns, maybe bags over people's heads that are contaminated, don't leave the room. Put them in the red biohazard container that's in the room. Don't allow them out of the room to spread disease. But those bags, that hospital was sending those bags home with patients to their home, to their community.
Assuming they would keep a bag on their head at home.
So. And so it's a contaminated, disposable item that should have been removed, left that room even. And so if it's contagious, if COVID really is wiping out people, and later, 3.5 years later, you have the FBI saying, you know what? It looks like it could have came from a lab. Of course it did. It was a bioweapon made in a lab.
Yep.
So if it's deadly and you're letting it, and you have a contaminated item, and you're bringing it home to the community in mass with every patient is in their to-go home bag, does that sound like a good idea? It's against what the CDC says you should do, and the CDC isn't always right. We'll talk about that in a moment, but.
We lost our rationality, go ahead.
Yeah, so go to the next. And so this is just an example again that the CDC is saying, there are some basic things that are not really complicated, and putting bags over people's heads, sending them home with the community to your house and your family is a bad idea. But go to the next. These are things that I never thought I'd see in my lifetime. Maybe read it in a science fiction book, but I never thought I'd see families covered with draped in plastic, trying to give each other hugs. But the things that we saw with COVID, you're probably going to see this again and again and again. And so what we're talking about is pattern recognition. What did we see with COVID? Number one, we were set up for this by laws. We just talked about the laws, the PREP Act, the UN Biological Weapons Convention Treaty, saying you can make a small batch of bioweapons if you make a vaccine at the same time. And no liability liability protection for vaccine manufacturers, they have no financial downside at all, no risk. Only gain. And when I say gain, you can go to the next one. And you saw overreach of power over and over again by
headline
governors.
Reads, Newsom makes vaccines mandatory for all school children in California.
And at that time, they were experimental. And so you were forcing human experimentation on children. Again, your child's body, the government's choice, right? And they were having a hard time letting go of, and science really got thrown out the window. We were told by Fauci he represented science. Basically, he is
science.
He says,
I am science.
And so you go to the next one. And so we saw some crazy things. These are just memes that I thought were funny that trigger me to think of the reality. Science, we knew for a long time that when we'd watch a flu outbreak 20 years ago, they would show B-roll of people in China walking with paper masks on their face, surgical masks. And we all, doctors and nurses and scientists, knew that was ridiculous, that it wouldn't, that the viruses are smaller than the webbing of the mask, and that won't work. But all of a sudden, we have extreme protection for mining, smoke, painting, pesticides, radioactive, but we're going to use a surgical mask made in China to protect us?
You know, one time you were on the show previously, and I made an endless list of links that you were on. One of them was an article, I just happened to see it again today. Dr. Fauci, when questioned, couldn't name any studies showing that masks work against COVID-19.
That was in his seven-hour deposition in the Missouri versus Biden case. And you had the Missouri Attorney General and the Louisiana Attorney General asking him questions, and he couldn't cite one study, which is the pattern with him, by the way. He'll say something, and he'll offer no randomized controlled trial, no science, no evidence, because there isn't any.
I'll throw in one quick observation. We've traveled recently a lot in the last month. We've been flying a lot. We see more people in the airports now with masks on than we did a year ago. And what if you talk to people, I don't question strangers, but you talk to people who use them, and they cannot let go of the idea that somehow they're safer wearing a mask. And so it is really a long-term impact on society, what Dr. Fauci and others pushed. You're going to have to wear a mask to be safe. And people, they became so filled with fear that even when you pointed out, well, there's actually no science behind that, it's not true at all, they can't let go of it.
I'm glad you said that. Next. This is kind of another meme. That kind of, I think this is kind of what you're trying to describe, that there's really, it's not science that's causing them to wear a mask when they're the only one in the car. When they're the only one driving a car and they're wearing a mask and there's no one else in the car, who are they protecting and who are they being protected from when they're wearing a mask? When they're walking across a empty parking lot and they're wearing the mask to a grocery store, who are they afraid of in the parking lot? Who are they protecting and who are they being protected from? There's no logic to this.
Yeah.
But you're right, it's training, kind of like training dogs.
Oh, what's that term one doctor used about it? It is a national psychosis.
Psychosis.
For those who aren't watching, you can't see the video. It's a picture of six different people who have a mask on their face, and they have little labels on. They say, I believe my TV, which is about what's happening. I am a slave. I don't ask. I trust the government. I'm in a cult. I live in fear. That explains your mask.
I didn't invent these memes, but they do speak to me, so I have them just to trigger my thoughts. You can go to the next one. And so...
okay, go ahead, sorry.
Next. So anyways, the mask. You can go to other countries and you'll get more factual information than you will in our mainstream media in the United States on purpose. As an American, I have to go to the UK and other countries, many times even Thailand, to get more legitimate medical scientific information than I am getting here. So this is the Telegraph out of the UK, and it says the title of the article is No Evidence Face Masks Protected Vulnerable from COVID, Health Officials Admit. But you're not hearing any health officials in the United States admit that out loud, are you?
Definitely not.
Not unless they're in deposition and they're asked, is there any evidence? And then Fauci says, I can't think of any. Like he hasn't been thinking about COVID for the last 3.5 years, I guess. Maybe he should start thinking about COVID.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you go to the next one. And so this is actually the science. The Cochrane Institute had a meta-analysis looking at all the data for masks, whether they protect you from a viral infection. And this was the summary of it all. The Cochrane Institute, and it's at the Cochrane Library, basically they don't work for a virus. We knew that, and we found it out in real time.
Yeah, I think one thing you mentioned, and I know other doctors have on the show, is people say, well, I go to the hospital and I see doctors in masks. Well, the idea of a mask, if you're doing it for COVID, you're thinking it's going to prevent the virus from breathing in the virus. But as you said earlier, the virus is so tiny, it's not prevented. It can enter back and forth in the mask. Doctors wear masks in hospitals to prevent things.
Bacterial infection.
Yeah, bacterial infection, or if you're doing surgery, even open wound, you know, sweat, and just kind of any human.
And the essence of it is bacterial infection. And so we don't want a bacterial wound that we would have to treat with antibiotics or interventions like drainage from a surgical wound. So we prep the skin with betadine, iodine, or hebiclens that kills virus bacteria on the surface on contact. And we wear a mask so we don't cause bacteria to come from our mouth or sweat off our skin into a wound and contaminate it. It's bacteria that are larger than, much larger
than
a virus that can be caught by a mask. And that's the only reason we wear surgical masks.
Yep, okay.
And so you go to the next one. And even Dr. Seuss is aware that surgical masks don't work.
That was a funny one.
Yeah.
I won't read. If you're listening to this show and you don't see the screen, you're listening on iTunes, please go to AmericaCanWeTalk.org and watch this show. These are hilarious and really, really, they're, we can't read them all. It takes too much time, but they're very, very fun.
Well, I want to go to vaccine safe and effective. You know, have we not been, if we can go to safe and effective, as you said in the introduction of this show, we were told there was only one solution. You said that 3.5 years ago at our first interview where we first met on the show. And you were a little skeptical. I could tell you were still weighing me out. You were cautious. I don't know this guy. I just met him last night, and you laid it out. And that's wisdom. But the bottom line, there has been censorship like never before for the last 3.5 years at least, and you and I were got ran over by it. You know, that interview had 5.5 million views on YouTube alone, and then it was taken, and parts of that were out again in many places. But that interview from your website, 5.5 million views in 10 days,
right,
was taken down because YouTube said it was inappropriate content. What was inappropriate? Can I tell you what we had in that? We said, don't be afraid, we have a solution. We actually presented a solution that Oxford confirmed in multiple studies, and that has since been added to the national treatment of COVID by Australia, by India, that has not been, every single study shows it works. It's not like ivermectin where half the studies work and half the studies don't work. This one actually was rescuing people off ventilators that had relied on ivermectin, and ivermectin failed them. And so ivermectin helped in many situations, but budesonide rescued people that had a failure with ivermectin. And so that's what you said on that show that was so offensive to them, because we talked about something that nobody was going to make any money off of. Literally, I said, nobody's going to make any money off this. It's $3 a treatment if you pay the full cash price and don't get a discount. And so because of that, that was probably one of the most offensive things I said, because people, $38 billion is what Pfizer made in 2022 alone with the shots out.
I do want to jump on that and hit a couple of points about that. The three treatments that we talked about, I've talked about on my show many times, that were available at the time before the vaccines came along, ivermectin, inhaled budesonide, and hydroxychloroquine, all of those were past their patent period. They were no longer patent protected. Is that the right word?
That's right. And so they were inexpensive.
So they were inexpensive. Whichever company made those originally made a lot of money when they came out. But at this point, they're inexpensive, and they have a long track record of being safe.
Exactly.
And this was what was infuriating to these biopharmaceutical companies, is because they're wanting to make millions again on their upcoming vaccines. And if you have people like Dr. Richard Bartlett saying, you know what, take a deep breath, there are other choices here, we don't have to panic. You know, they want you afraid. They want you panicked, so you just wait and you'll do what they tell you to do.
We talked about early treatment as an option. They didn't want that out. They wanted everybody to hide. Shelter in place was the medical term, the term they used. Shelter in place. That meant hide in place. Be afraid of your neighbor. They might kill you and your family. So stay away from your neighbor. Tell on your neighbor if they're not wearing a mask. Be suspicious. It was causing a great deal of division. It was causing a great deal of fear. Yeah. Debbie, what do you call a campaign to cause fear to the masses? Do you call that terrorism?
I was just going to say tyranny, but I like terrorism. They're terrorizing the people intentionally.
It was terrorism. It was an aggressive, purposeful, well-documented campaign of terrorism on the American people. To cause fear in the masses is terrorism. And so
I want to quick read this. There's a protester holding a sign. It says a meme. It says, of course, all scientists agree when you censor the ones who don't. Is that ever a true story?
And so you lived that. You really rattled some cages and offended people because they had a long plan. If you'll think about 1975 was when they said this loophole, according to Harvey Risch, is you can make a small batch of bioweapons. If you make a vaccine, you have a solution at the same time as the problem in case it leaks from a lab, in case it gets out of a lab in any other way. And that's what COVID was. It came from a lab. And the solutions also came from the same sources. And so that's really interesting. And you really foiled their plan. And that
I would say you did, but go ahead.
Can you imagine if they wouldn't have taken that down? 5.5 million views in 10 days. What would have happened if that stayed up for 3 years? Would we have had people treated with early treatment that later was validated and now is standard in other countries? How many lives would have been saved?
Yeah, and fear would have then dissipated because they would just, oh my gosh, there is something. Fear itself is unhealthy. It makes you unhealthy.
Dr. Ben Carson asked me in Midland, he said, "Doctor, how many people died that shouldn't have?"
What's the answer in your view?
And I said at least 90%, according to the Oxford Stoic trial.
Oh,
you think
gosh.
About 1.1 million Americans died. What if 900,000 Americans should not have died, according to the science, according to the evidence? Because Oxford Stoic trial showed that 90% of hospitalizations, ER visits, and even urgent care visits would never have happened. People would have never had to go to even an urgent care center if they were treated early with budesonide. But it was rescuing people in late disease, too, because with COVID or the future bird flu that they are pushing, budesonide helps with late disease, too. And so we'll talk about that later. But right now, I think we're talking censorship. So everybody agrees if you censor everybody that doesn't. And the next one is just to remind me that celebrities were paid millions of dollars by the government to promote the COVID shots. If they're that good idea, do you have to pay millions of dollars to celebrities to coerce the public without science? They weren't offering science.
Right. Just trying to validate it to people.
Yeah.
Oh, Jennifer Aniston. Yeah, that's funny. Leaving.
All right, next.
Okay. Yeah.
So this is actually in 1969. A Harvard professor back in 1969 said a quote that is out on the internet still, saying the FDA is not protecting the American people. The FDA is controlled and protect and working for the pharmaceutical companies. Well, that's not what I understood when I went into medical school and came out of medical school. That's not what I understood before COVID. I really believed we could trust that there are some people. Sure, there's people that are bad, people that are greedy, people that are immoral and unethical. That could be bought, but not everybody. That'd be very cynical. But at this point, it's pretty clear that the FDA trying to hide safety data from the American people and doctors for 75 years tells me that I was wrong. And so
wrong in trusting them and assuming they could be trusted.
Assuming that they could be trusted. Next. So, you know, a term that we started hearing regularly was conspiracy theory. I didn't hear conspiracy theory nearly as much as I did until COVID came out and COVID shots. That's a common cuss word that's used against conservative people that question and use their brain.
Yeah. Do you know where the term came from?
It came from the CIA after
the
Kennedy assassination.
Yeah, CIA. They did it to squelch rumors and discussion of anything they didn't want to have the people talking about. The term conspiracy theory was cultivated by the CIA to essentially shame people into silence because you don't want to be called a conspiracy theorist. This is a great meme that's up. A bunch of cows sitting around, one of them standing up pointing to a meatpacking factory, and he's so he's pointing, trying to warn the fellow cows. It says how it feels trying to warn people about the true nature of government. And then one of the cows who's mocking the guy warning and says, "I see Mr. Conspiracy Theory is at it again." That was a great one. That was a great one.
I'm telling you, a picture's worth a thousand words, isn't it? And so if we could go to safe and effective at this point, we have been told safe and effective, and a lot of people have been brainwashed with that. They just assume if I hear, and we know in medical school, you learn by repetition. There's so much to learn in medicine that you have to have every trick of memorizing at your disposal when you're trying to cram all that information in your brain during medical school.
Yep.
We learn by repetition. That's how humans learn. And so if you'll go to safe and effective, please, Emilio. Okay. Well, I'll just talk for a moment.
Okay. While he's looking at that, I wanted to make sure we do not, because we have, I guess I'm trying to watch our time here. We have 21 minutes left, and I do want to hit a bunch of stories. I love all these slides, and what we're basically talking about now is...
I'm just going to talk safe and effective with you real quick.
Okay, go ahead.
So, because we're going to be told with future experimental vaccines, which are literally human experimentation, they're safe and effective. We've decided they're safe and effective. The FDA has deemed it safe and effective, so we're going to give emergency use authorization for human experimentation. And so just roll up your sleeve and get the new latest experimental shot for each pandemic coming. And like I said, the WHO listed 9 pandemics that you can expect that are in the can. And so what do I mean? Well, they say, well, these are diseases of potential pandemic potential. We did the research. Many of these have been documented to be in gain-of-function research in labs around the world, meaning bioweapon creation, and there are vaccines being made for all 9 of them right now as a countermeasure. And so they're experimental. Yes?
Well, you know, I wanted to hit at some point, go back to your point about World Health Organization listing these 9 impending pandemics, to ask you, are they all man-made? Are they all manufactured? Is there manufactured? I mean, people used to fear pandemics because they thought they came from, you know, mosquitoes or some other source that wasn't intentionally concocted. But WHO is talking about pandemics coming from cultivated viruses.
Listen carefully, everyone that's listening right now. We were told that COVID came from nature. We were told that it was bats. Maybe pangolins. They listed a bunch of animals and they said it's a zoonotic infection, came from animals to humans. So pay attention. Zoonotic, you'll hear that word again and again. You'll hear that it came from animals to humans. It was a natural phenomena. But they don't say, by the way, we also have bioweapons that were created by gain-of-function research in labs around the world. In 2011, is when gain-of-function research on bird flu was starting in University of Wisconsin. We've never had a bird flu disaster for humans, really. In the United States, it's never been a threat like COVID. But we had CDC Director Robert Redfield say that COVID was just a wake-up call. The great pandemic will be a bird flu that kills 10 to 15% of the people. We haven't had 10 to 15% of the people wiped out with COVID. And so I'm saying, why would he say that? And why would he? And in the next breath in that interview, he said, I disagree with Anthony Fauci. He published the genetic engineering changes that need to happen to make bird flu highly contagious for humans. And I'm against that. It's out there for all our enemy states.
He was against the publication of it.
Yes, because every enemy state, every nut could make a bioweapon now because he made it public knowledge. And so what could go wrong when you make public knowledge? Could it be something from nature? We were told that COVID came from nature. It didn't come from nature.
Right.
We were told
from
the
lab.
We were told that they don't make dangerous things in labs. Well, this one came from the lab, and the evidence was talked about in great detail in Congress hearings recently. We were told the only solution is a experimental vaccine. We're going to hear that. We're going to hear all these tales again and again and again. We're going to be told there's no early effective treatment that's safe and inexpensive, but there will be again and again and again. So that's the pattern I want people to recognize, and the censorship of the truth.
Okay, I want to go back to these with some kind of maybe the philosophical questions, but if World Health Organization is talking about 9 impending pandemics and they relate to viruses and they are at the same time coming up with vaccines.
A solution to the problem.
A solution to them. So is there any, I'm trying to understand how someone working with this or behind it would defend it. Would they say, well, you know, our enemies.
It's convoluted.
Well, I mean, they say our enemies may be creating these, or worse people, China may be creating these. So we're actually, this is defensive research, so we're ready. Is
yes.
that valid?
So that's part of it. But, you know, it's kind of flawed because we have the USDA that recently sent over $1 million to Chinese scientists to fund making vaccines for us, for our country.
Yeah.
So in 2024, this is being talked about by Joni Ernst, a Iowa U.S. senator. And so when a U.S. senator is calling this out, that's not fringe conspiracy theory. And so what I'm saying is their argument is, well, we want to stay one step ahead of nature. We're smarter than nature, and we want to go ahead and push the envelope here. See what the next deadly germ is that's going to come from this particular strain, and then we can make a vaccine against it. That's their logic. But the obvious evidence to everybody on the planet is that's what they were doing with COVID. Look, there's evidence that it's a bad idea to keep doing this, but they're doing it even with COVID. Boston University just bragged a year ago that they made a strain of COVID that kills 80%.
Of Americans?
Yes.
80% of people?
80% of the rats in the lab. So, but they're humanized mice that they're using, so that's telling you what it could do to humans. And then you had the CDC lab in South Korea said, we have also created a strain of COVID that can kill 80%. And then China recently said, we can top that. We made a strain of COVID that has 100% kill rate. Why are we doing this when we saw COVID as it was a big enough disaster? Evidence, exhibit A, that gain of function research should not happen. That's why Rand Paul has been so vocal about this. He's for the American people.
He absolutely is. So I want to figure out where we go from here. So we say it's because it's not just America. It's not just, you know, our labs. It's not just one other country. Many countries, you just mentioned a few, are working on this. And it seems like in these laboratories of death, they're coming up with dangerous viruses. And maybe they're also coming up with a vaccine to deal with it. But in what way? The world can't stop this. I mean, we'd like to stop America, at least our own government, but on the other hand, some would say, well, we better be doing something because if China releases something, we better know how to counter it. But how do you can't get this back into the genie back in the bottle, I don't think.
Well, yes, I think you could.
Okay.
I think you could at least do what you can. And see, that's what they wanted us to feel was helpless and hopeless. And there is help. We were not helpless and hopeless, even though they said that at the beginning of COVID. There are early effective treatments, number one. They don't want you to focus on that. And that comes to motives, and I'm a doctor, I'm not a judge, I'm not a jury, I'm not a lawyer, so motives is different than my wheelhouse.
Okay. But I'm agreeing with you. I want you to talk about, I'm just saying, I don't think anything someone decides will stop them from trying to create them. You're just trying to say, we need to focus what we have to deal with them.
No, I think you can eventually elect some leadership or have some leadership as long as we have some semblance of freedom in the United States and some, and if the election system has any validity and we can put someone that can be a leader and say no more gain of function on my watch with our people, our country. And I really believe if we stop it here, that's what one of the things that Senator Joni Ernst has talked about that I've talked about is this bio lab that's being created in the middle of the United States in Fort Collins, Colorado, and they're shipping bats in from China. And so what could go wrong when you make in my opinion, a Wuhan Institute of Virology 2.0 on steroids right in the middle of the United States? We had a problem that came from the other side of the planet that greatly harmed Americans. What would happen if that happened here in the United States? And Joni Ernst says, we don't need a pandemic to happen start on our own soil. She's right.
Love that. So leadership in America could at least pull back on America, certainly not pushing or funding gain of function research. And then I guess you have to deal with things that come here from other countries.
The purse strings, power of the purse strings. We're sending over $1 million to Chinese scientists to make vaccines for our country right now.
Well, that's a whole other problem of why pharmaceutical companies aren't manufacturing them here. Even most of the drugs in America that you get in hospitals and prescriptions, much of it made
repeal in China. Repeal the PREP Act. Start making people accountable for their actions.
Okay. I want to hear some other quick stories just because this is a whirlwind topic, I know. But we've been talking about what we should have learned from COVID. We saw patterns. We want to not repeat those patterns. If we cede essentially authority to the World Health Organization, which is the vote coming up at the end of May in America, if we cede that to the World Health Organization, it seems like the first thing they'll do is say, yep, we have another pandemic, and they'll launch off on all the same things, even though we learned they didn't work. We'll, you know, this the mask mandates,
shelter. They're still thinking that they're going to push
masks. Shelter in place. All those things are coming again from World Health Organization.
Social distancing, yes. Yeah. Shutting down small businesses, causing waves of small businesses to be bankrupted, never to come back. Centralization of control of food, control of medical care, control of the media. All those things, control, 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 and less freedom, less freedom, less freedom for the American people is maybe the goal, maybe part of the goal.
Oh, I think it is. I mean, so much of what happened now, as we're able to study it, was a conscious decision not to help the American people get better, but to use the government's power both to cause people to fear more and to be compliant and submissive to the government. And these next things come along. I mean, the pandemic worked more than even threats of climate change worked to make people just fear and freeze in place. Here's some quick things I've read about recently. Ask you. So I'm reading about weaponized gene-edited mosquitoes brought to us by Bill Gates and others. So is there, I mean, just quickly tell what's happening with that, and is there a legitimate reason to try to use mosquitoes to fight against diseases like malaria?
So we know mosquitoes and ticks are called vectors. They carry diseases. The disease doesn't kill the mosquito or the tick, but they can transmit it to humans. And so we call those vectors. And so mosquitoes and ticks, mosquitoes are probably the most prolific, most effective vector on the planet. So Bill Gates has made factories, literally factories, that are pumping out billions of mosquitoes. And then they're being dumped on populations around the world. Actually, I think we talked about it at one point, that it's been in the United States. These mosquitoes have been released in Florida, Texas, and California.
Yeah.
And everywhere these mosquitoes have been released, we've seen a subsequent, I'm just saying temporally, in time, after the fact, a spike in mosquito-borne illnesses.
Okay, I want to jump in. The mosquitoes being bred in factories and released are supposedly the design, the claim is, the purpose is to stop the spread of disease, to have essentially impotent male mosquitoes that get female mosquitoes, and female mosquitoes, the only ones that bite and cause disease, but somehow this release of male mosquitoes causes female mosquitoes to not be able to reproduce or to reproduce without
So it's flawed. That's the argument. Their argument. It's flawed. And so here's one of the practicals, scientific fact. If there's different stages in the mosquito development, if you don't have all the mosquitoes in the same stage and you don't irradiate them at the right stage, one of the ways that they were sterilizing the mosquitoes, attempting to sterilize them, was radiation. Then some of those, if they're not irradiated at the right stage of development, will not be sterilized. And then you've just dumped a lot of mosquitoes that are not sterilized on the population that are multiplying. And so look at Bangladesh last year. Bangladesh had some of these mosquitoes that were made in factories dumped on their population. It was about 3 or 4 months later, if I remember right, that they had their biggest disaster with dengue fever, a disease that is mosquito-borne. I thought it was supposed to decrease the diseases. And so we're seeing in real time, they're planning on it in Brazil. I think Brazil's starting to have more trouble. Puerto Rico was a recent story about mosquitoes going to get dumped there. But let's just not stop with mosquitoes. We're talking about Bill Gates, who's not a doctor, a nurse, a chiropractor, a pharmacist in a hospital. Let's see, he's not an orderly. He's not what do you call those ladies that are
pinstriper?
Yeah. He doesn't work at the gift shop in a hospital. He has no qualifications in my mind, but he is behind this push. And so they're not just making mosquitoes now. There's reports that they're having tick factories.
Well, oh my gosh. Yeah. Okay. So all of what he's doing, I realize how much this has raced by. We only have a couple of minutes left. I realize that he's doing things and he always has a reason that he articulates. But when the evidence shows, I mean, the article I happened to read was about Brazil and how so much when they release all these mosquitoes to get rid of dengue fever, it ended up having a massive spike. And there was a long explanation of why. But the short story is trying to release mosquitoes which carry diseases into an area that already has a problem with those diseases has proved disastrous.
It's kind of like the same idea of vaccinating out of a pandemic. pandemic. If there's a pandemic already happening, I think it was Dr. Harvey Risch from Yale that I heard say, we've never been able to vaccinate ourselves out of a pandemic. He's exactly right. I wouldn't have even thought that that was even something would people would consider before COVID. And we've proven that you can't vaccinate yourself out of a pandemic. They said if you get the shot, you won't get COVID. They said if you get the shot, you won't spread COVID because we were wrong. You can get COVID. And so they you got to get 2 shots, 3 shots, 5 shots, 6 shots. Until you say, I don't want any shots anymore, you're going to be told there's another shot. And so you can't vaccinate out of a pandemic. We've proven that. And Biden fibbed during the State of the Union address. I'm going to point it out.
That's a polite word. Go ahead.
He said that these mRNA shots are the reason why we're out of the pandemic ended. Baloney. As a doctor, because Biden is not, here's Biden's background as far as a doctor. He said if you get the COVID shot, you won't get COVID. He said that loud and clear.
Right.
And so that shows how much medical acumen he has. But when he said that the vaccines got us out of COVID, no. The viruses have become less virulent over time. Early treatment has been promoted and is worldwide now. Whole nations are, including the most populous country in the world, India, has added budesonide and early treatment strategies. So we have a whole different situation now than we had at the beginning of COVID. COVID is over because COVID's over. It's not because of the vaccines. They're not. Our attorney general in Texas sued Pfizer because they misrepresented the effectiveness of their shots. And so safe and effective, I'm saying the number one lawyer in Texas says they lied about the effectiveness, and the number one doctor in Florida said they lied about the safety. And so these are not fringe ideas and fringe personalities.
I'll tell you, they may not be fringe ideas, but you have been, I'm kind of going back to, at this end here to where I started. You have been among the doctors in this country and really around the world, a small handful willing to keep on insisting on truth, insisting not just saluting to the authorities who tell you, you must say this, you can't say this. I know not only you, but many doctors I know have had their medical license threatened,
I had four attempts to get my license by anonymous, frivolous accusations trying to wear me out here in Texas. And they were bogus. They were ridiculous. One of them was because on that first interview with you, I said I was explaining about budesonide, clarithromycin, and aspirin as a winning strategy to treat COVID. And I said, but budesonide is the silver bullet of the strategy. Because I use that term silver bullet, one of the complaints to the medical board is he used the term medical silver bullet. And that you can't say that term. That was literally the accusation.
Yeah. I will tell you, I commend your bravery and also your tenacity. You're just deciding I'm going to keep studying and actually look at facts and not hysteria and look at outcomes of tests and outcomes of various forms of treatments. I mean, I just can't commend your bravery and your strength strongly enough. We are near the end. I just want to say we're trying today, and I just want to give you a chance to wrap it up. We're trying to kind of talk about we learned a lot from COVID, and it was not, you know, we learned a lot of good things. So recognize the patterns. Don't dive into the patterns again. We now know that World Health Organization is, you know, planning to implement or at least predicting the impending pandemics. And so your advice to Americans as the next pandemics are coming along is, you want to just...
Summarize is inform yourself. Go to johnfleetwood.com, johnfleetwood.com. He's putting out a lot of useful information that are quick reads with lots of links and lots of receipts to prove it. Keep up with Debbie Georgiatos and America Can We Talk. There are early treatment strategies for every one of those that are listed. There is telemedicine service called SynergyHealthDPC.com. I believe that'll be shown on the website. I have no ownership or operation or kickbacks or anything else with these. I'm just trying to help people. Bottom line, you care about people. I care about people. Our children, our grandchildren, our neighbors, people that are just humans, we want to treat them like we'd want to be treated, and that is why you're getting the truth out. And so they can keep up with the facts, and don't roll up your sleeve and cut in line for a new experimental human experimentation shot that has no long-term safety data, or a new pill that comes from Pfizer that's experimental.
Yeah, I'd love to see if there were a strong enough new administration, a reduction or elimination or adjustment to the immunity that all of the vaccine companies have on the vaccines. The notion of just pushing the Congress to, because the vaccine, the pharmaceuticals companies will behave differently if they actually have potential liability, and that they're fearless.
I've been told that I've been suggested as an advisor for the next president if he gets in.
Oh, please, that would be wonderful.
If he does that, you can expect that I'm going to have the people's best interests at heart. There will not be blanket immunity where someone's baby gets killed, and you can and there's no repercussions. There's so much of an incentive right now to push anything as a vaccine because it's going to be a moneymaker, especially if you have the inroads into Congress right now and the government, because they just put $1 billion on the table for the next pandemic. We just funded it. The money is already on the table. And so now you can almost hear the pitter-patter of the feet of the lobbyists for pharmaceutical companies trying to get a piece of the pie.
Yep. Speaking of interactions in Washington, we've talked about, and others have as well on this show, the concept of regulatory capture and how these agencies who are supposed, they're funded by tax dollars, they're supposed to be looking out for the health and welfare of the American people, but they are so intertwined with the biopharmaceutical companies, it is like a conveyor belt back and forth of officials, and the biopharmaceuticals seem to be more protective of the federal government, CDC, NIH, FDA, more protective of the pharmaceutical companies than of the American people, which is what you saw in the case you described.
What's wrong with this, Debbie? Commissioner of the FDA fast-tracking something that has no long-term safety data, approving it, getting it out on the market, and then months later getting hired by that pharmaceutical company for a huge amount of money. What's wrong with that? That's happened over and over and over recently.
Yeah, that's a specific example of what Congress could do. I mean, they've taken action in other contexts to say, you know, to prevent back and forth between the private sector and the regulatory agencies, because you end up just compromising the agency's integrity. We are past time. I want to tell you, Dr. Bartlett, I am so grateful you came in again today, and this was a education really for me and for our listeners. I want to thank you so much just for being here, for all that you do.
I'm going to make the word get out of early treatment strategies for these other problems before we get hit with them. And so God bless America. Let's pray for each other, because there's going to be forces that don't want this information out.
Absolutely true. And my very fine friends, this is a special edition of America Can We Talk. We just have a friend in Dr. Bartlett, who has been an extraordinary leader in the medical community, outspoken, full of integrity, and just presenting truth. No financial incentive tied to any pharmaceutical company, just simply a doctor who is looking out for the health and well-being of the American people. So I'm grateful he could be here today. I thank you so very much for tuning in to America Can We Talk. You can find this interview, if you're listening somewhere else, you're not on our website, you can find the interview at our website, AmericaCanWeTalk.org, or on Twitter at DebbieCanWeTalk, or on Rumble, many other, almost every other social media platform, except, of course, YouTube, which we're not going to talk about again. But do listen to this interview again. Share it with your friends. The point of this interview is to spread knowledge instead of fear. When you have more knowledge, you have less fear. Urge you to share it with your friends. And again, thank you, Dr. Bartlett, for coming in. Thank you for tuning in to America Can We Talk. I do this show to speak truth about America, because America matters. And I'll talk to you next time.
America Can We Talk? Truth about America.
Can you